Thanks. Glad to be here. I have way too much to present to you. We're not going to get it done in 45 minutes. One of the cool things the Center for the Family has done is they've set up some times after this session, and it's not in the normal schedule, but if you want to sign up for some kind of coaching opportunities where we can just sit down and talk about ministry in your particular context, there's 3 hours set aside in the rest of the day, one before lunch and two after lunch, where we could just sit down, one, two, three, four of us, just and dialogue and process some of what I'm going to blast at you now. So we may not have a lot of time for question and answers because we have those opportunities set up for you. And this fine young lady in the front has the sign-up sheet if you're interested in that. I think the times are at
11, 1, and 2:30.
So those are your options, 11, 1, and 2:30, and she'll tell you where to go and where to meet with me if you're interested in pursuing that a little farther. This little starting question is a bit of a teaser, and I'm not going to give you the full summary of this, but it was interesting. What's the actual or current divorce rate in the U.S.? And here's the way your voting came out. Most of you really feel like it's in the 45 to 50% range. If I were to go back to the answers, you could see that they look like this. These are the options that you had when you voted. And actually, every one of those numbers is really very important. A friend of mine, Shanti Feldhahn, has a book coming out next week called The Good News About Marriage, where she has spent 7 years, she and a co-researcher, 7 years going through what the divorce rates are and what they aren't. And it's a fascinating read, and I think it's really important for Christians to be familiar with, simply because the whole notion that half of all marriages end in divorce is simply not true. It's never been true, but it is the rhetoric of our culture. And the net result of that is that we have this really diminished view of the institution of marriage. And cohabitation is a viable option. Why in the world would you want to get married when half of marriages end in divorce anyway? Well, as it turns out, that's not true. And isn't it true that Christians have the same divorce rate as non-Christians? That also is not true, right? And so she is dispelling some of these really fascinating myths, and I'm going to just tease you around that book, and you can kind of go and find out. By the way, the discussion breaks down, the question asks current divorce rate. Turns out that's different than the projected divorce rate. Projections are how many might divorce, how many women might get cancer. When you hear one in three, one in, what is it? What are the numbers? Something like that. That's a projection. Does that mean one in three women today have cancer? No. That means if you live like we think you're going to live, that's what we project might be the case. Same thing's true of divorce rates. There are many who will say the divorce rate projection is 40 to 50% today in our culture. And that's a true projection. But that's based on a mathematical configuration that, interestingly enough, we've been making projections for about 40 years now, and we've never hit them. Never. I find that interesting. The actual divorce rate is more like 30 to 35%. The actual, meaning people who are actually divorced at this point in time, is probably for remarried couples, stepfamily couples, who we're talking about today, is here. You've heard me say in the past that it's 60 to 70%. That's what I've published for 10 years. I've changed that because of Shanti's book. All right? 50 to 60% for stepfamily couples. 45 to 50%, oh, excuse me, 30 to 35 is all couples. First married couples with a college education is probably 20 to 25%. And Christian couples, not just who wear the label, but who actually show up at church and do things that are based on their faith, have a divorce rate of 15 to 20%. We have good news to share with people. Let me encourage you to pick up Shawnee's book. It comes out in a... I'll show you a picture of it if I can get this to move forward. It comes out in 1 week, The Good News About Marriage. Pick that up. So let's just jump right in and talk more specifically about what we're here to talk about, and that is about blended families, okay? I work for an organization called Family Life. It's based in Little Rock, Arkansas. It's an international marriage and family ministry. You may have heard of Family Life Today, our national radio broadcast. We are in 101 countries. We have about 90,000 people a year who go through our marriage conference. We have had 400,000 people in the last 3 years go through our video-based curriculum called The Art of Marriage. We do arena events. We'll be in Portland, Chicago, and Washington, D.C. this year with about 15,000 people at each of those three events. We're a big organization, and I'm really proud and happy to be with them. I've been with them now for about 2 years, and I lead the blended family effort, and we call ourselves Family Life Blended, Strengthening Step Families. And so I want to share with you today some thoughts about what's unique about step family living, why the church has to respond, and what we can do. All right, so that's a heavy agenda, so please forgive me for trying to roll through this pretty quickly. You do have a handout. Some of the detailed slides are actually on the handout, so you might want to feel free to take advantage of that. So what would you say if I told you not all marriages are created the same? You know, you don't start every relationship the same. I just said a minute ago, couples who get married who have a college degree have a likelihood of divorce of somewhere around 20 to 25%. But couples who get married with a high school degree have a much, much higher divorce rate. Much, much higher divorce rate. And that's one of the big gaps that's happening in our culture, is that the educated and the less educated have completely different world life experiences in terms of their family. And so it makes a difference where you are in life and how it is that you come together. Likewise, coming together when children precede this union makes a difference. It's a different ocean, if you will. You swim in a different ocean than people who are swimming in the first marriage ocean. And there's some different things about it. So let me just introduce you to Brett and Allison, and I want you to listen to them and talk a little bit about their experience in becoming a step family, and then what it was like for them to go to church.
I'm Allison Silver-Amen, and I have two kids, Azaria and Jasper.
And I'm Brett Dumpf, and I had one child, Trey Dumpf.
And then we had one together, Gabriel.
And we're a blended family.
When we first got together, I had this picture that we were all going to join together and sit on the couch together and watch movies and snuggle up and have popcorn together, and we would be this happy family, and it didn't quite work out that way. It was rough and terrible in the beginning. There were days that I didn't think we were going to make it through.
We didn't know exactly what we were getting ourselves into, but we knew that something bigger was taking place than what we were aware of. I've heard that an analogy before of a step family is like a crock pot, and all the ingredients are kind of like the different family members, and you've always got a carrot that takes longer to cook than others, and we definitely had a carrot in our crock pot that took a little longer to warm up. You know, the crock pot is a lot different than a microwave, and I think when we went into this, we were hoping that we'd just throw it in the microwave, and you know, a minute, 30 seconds later, we have popcorn. It's done. And the crock pot's been going 10 years now, and we've actually started to see quite a bit of difference than when we first started our family.
I think it's a natural tendency as a parent to want the best for your kids and want it to be perfect for them and try to raise them in a really great home. And we fall so short on that, especially in a blended family. Like, there's so many complicated mixed up layers to that you just at some point have to trust that God knows the bigger story and that God loves them more than you love them, and it's going to be okay as long as you are where He wants you to be. We came to GCC, and we started taking some of the classes there. We took the financial peace class, and that really bonded our marriage together. And we started taking some parenting classes and marriage classes, and we always left feeling kind of like there was something missing, like some of the things that work for traditional families just don't work for step families. When you're parenting your biological child versus your stepchild, there's so many different layers, and it's so multifaceted. Traditional family practices just kind of don't work for them. I think I cried every day the first year.
And when I would come home from work, I had no idea if I was coming home to happy Allison or sad Allison or what. for so long, I think I really tried to be her source of happiness when we first got together. God has to be her source of happiness first.
It took us a long time to figure out the balance of prioritizing life with God and then our marriage and then our children.
And when you have four kids in a blended household, it can be very easy to put the kids first. It's really leaning in and having faith that God knows what he's doing, because every day is definitely not easy or what you have pictured going into it. It's difficult. It's a lot of work. Trusting God and know that you're just going to mess up sometimes. Hang in there. And every day is not going to be easy. And choose to stay.
Okay, so there's definitely some complexity. There's definitely some things that are different. Parenting is different. The experience of marriage is different. There's some challenges they didn't see coming. There's challenges for the kids. There's challenges for the adults. Then they go to church, and there's some challenges there. They go to the parenting class, and it doesn't really make sense. Mm-hmm. They go to the marriage class, and it doesn't really connect to their life experience. You see, they're swimming in a different ocean. But the funny thing is, they don't realize it. They still think they're swimming in the first family ocean. And what they're getting at church is first family advice to first family questions. And so there's a disconnect. Yeah, but what do we do about this shark? What do we do about that reef? What do we do about this water temperature? How do we dive in this? How do we swim in this water, in these oceans, and swim well as a couple and manage the things that the demands and the challenges that are in front of us? And so it's really that disconnect that creates the opportunity, obviously, for the church to step in. Clearly, this is not plan A family. This is a plan B family. This is, life has thrown them a curve for whatever reason, by death, by divorce, by an out-of-wedlock pregnancy, and now we have a marriage to somebody who's not the biological father. It's changed the ocean for them. And so for us, the opportunity is to step in and to make a difference. Now, some people are still single, and they're looking for somebody. Okay? And so they're advertising everywhere they go, open position. And the assumption there is, if I could fill that open position, then we will have created the first family ocean. But what we're saying is, fundamentally, it's a different family when they do create it. It's still a family. It can be strong and stable and healthy and vibrant and loving and grace-filled and awesome for kids if they know how to swim in that ocean and swim well. How many are we talking about? We're talking 40% of all families in the U.S. are step families. Now, that's a very broad statistic. It's the best number we have. You'll see other numbers that are much lower than that. And that's because, A, they didn't count the families where the kids are over the age of 18. And B, they didn't count the second home. You know, think about it. Most step families have two homes. So we just count one home, but we didn't count the other home. And then we should count the other home. So when we do that, and we do that right, this is the best number we have. 40% of families where there's kids involved are step families. It's a lot of people. If we look at it from a number standpoint, it's 100 million Americans have a step parent, a step sibling, or a step child relationship. They can reach out and touch it. 100 million, that's a lot. And I would estimate that less than 0.5% of churches in the United States have any sort of initiative to this people group. And it's 100 million people, 40% of families. You know, you just do the numbers. I work for Family Life. We're the only ministry in the world that has an initiative with people, money, and a budget for step families. We're it. So there's challenges involved. We're just on the leading edge of this. But you think about where divorce recovery was 40 years ago. Who had ever heard of a divorce recovery ministry? Nobody had ever heard of one. But a church in Colorado Springs, First Presbyterian Church, held a divorce recovery workshop, the first one of its kind, back in the mid-60s. That church now has a stepfamily ministry, by the way. but now, how many churches have divorce recovery? Well, we've kind of figured out, hey, this is a felt need. This is a life experience. This is a transition where people need the church to come alongside them, step in, and be the church. I kind of think that's what's going to happen in 40 years around step family. So we're on the leading edge of this thing. And really, we've just got to make some decisions about how we move forward. So let me just jump ahead 40% of married families and 50 to 60% of them will probably end up in divorce at some point. Just a quick little comment about what we're trying to do here. If I could just kind of boil it down to one sentence, one or two sentences, I would simply say this. We are not letting go of we're not condoning somebody's past. We're not saying, hey, it's okay if you got a divorce. We're not saying that to anybody. We're never blessing choices and sin. Now, not everybody in a step family has sinned. All right? There are people there because of a choice that somebody else made. There are people in blended families because of death. So it's not always a sin story, but sometimes it is. You know, somebody rebelled and left the spouse and did crazy stuff, and it gave birth now to a step family situation. We're not blessing the past, but we are saying that God can redeem the present. And this is not a new message for us. It's called grace. And we just got to remember that, because sometimes in conversations behind closed doors with elderships and pastors and leaders and that sort of those kinds of folks, we kind of forget that this is the heart of the ministry, is a grace ministry, a redeeming effort on our part. The church can be pro-hospital without being pro-illness. We just need to remember that. And we do this all the time. We do divorce recovery, and we don't think we're condoning divorce, and we do. We even celebrate recovery in churches all over this country, but we're not celebrating addiction. We're not celebrating what got them there. We're saying there's good news for today, right? And so that's a fundamental kind of message that we need to make sure as you talk and have conversations with people. And we're also talking about redeeming the next generation. It's one thing to say we're going to prevent divorce. It's another thing to say we're going to prevent re-divorce, right? Because this remarriage is in a different ocean. So we got to prevent re-divorce in a different way. And we're also we now know that when we do this well, a strong, stable, healthy step family makes a difference in the next generation. Children who grow up in that strong, stable home have marriages that more reflect the strong, stable step family marriage than their parents who divorced in the first place, which is a generational impact, which is really amazing. We actually have science behind that, that we can track that over time. And so what we're doing is redeeming this generation and the next one when we help this step family to be all that it can be. I think that's good news, okay? That's the motivation about why we're going to do this. Okay, so what is it that we're going to do? Let me walk through a couple of barriers. I'm not going to do these justice, but I'm going to hit them kind of fast and furious, and it's in your notes, so if you want to fill in some blanks. We don't want to perceive the need. What do I mean by that? Is churches? I was in local church ministry for 20 years of my life. You're busy. You're not sitting around looking for something else to do. All right, I get it. It's another thing, right? Well, I got good news for you, because here's where we're going to end up this morning. It's not another thing. It's just doing something you're already doing a little differently. Marriage ministry. It's marriage ministry, and we'll come back to that. Another barrier is the theological struggles. And I think it was, I was trying to remember the other day, about 10 years ago, I was here at the Pepperdine Lectures, and Carol Osborne from Abilene Christian University did a three-day series on biblical, scriptural views of marriage, divorce, and remarriage. And he started that presentation. I'll never forget it. It was phenomenal. He started that presentation by saying, I would really rather not be here right now. This is a very challenging subject. Trying to flesh out what does scripture say about marriage and divorce and remarriage. What's right? What's biblical? What's not biblical? What's a biblical divorce? What's not a biblical divorce? What's a biblical remarriage? All of those very difficult questions. He said, I would rather eat a large bug than do what I'm about to do. I'll never forget it. It is a challenging subject. The scholars don't agree. You and I are not going to figure it out. Sorry, you may be super smart. I don't think you're going to figure it out. Through the 2,000 years since Christ lived and walked the earth, we have not figured out exactly what Scripture teaches us about marriage, divorce, and remarriage. There is debate, and there is good debate. But here's what I know. You got to figure something out. You got to figure out some of the questions, because your church needs to have a theology that informs your practice, your ministry. And senior minister and elders need to really feel confident that you're going to say and do in the ministry what they think is biblical. And if they don't have that confidence, they're not giving you money. And they're not going to stand up on Sunday morning and say, hey, go to the step family class. They're not going to support it. And so you really have to have those hard, difficult, awkward, We got to wrestle with these conversations at some point, at somewhere in the process, so that everybody feels really good about it. And you're going to end up where you end up, and that's an okay thing, because I always think people need to be responsible, accountable is a better word. They need to be accountable to their local church anyway, because that's where they're going to walk out life. Does that make sense? Okay, so two questions. Let me just give you a couple examples you need to settle. If somebody comes to you and they're dating and they're engaged or thinking about getting engaged and they've been divorced, how do you handle that? Right? Do they have any responsibility to try to reconcile the first marriage? That's a theologically driven question. Are they free to marry this person? That's a theologically driven question. If they are free, great. If they're not free, how are you going to handle that as in a pastoral sense? How are you going to bring up that conversation and deal with it? That's the kind of stuff you got to wrestle with. If they're already married, and in the course of getting to know them, that you figure out their past, and you figure out that biblically they probably shouldn't have gotten divorced and they probably shouldn't have gotten married, but they is. What are you going to do with that? Okay, I'll tell you where I've come down on that one. They're married. And we're going to help them stay married. It could be we could make an argument that if we could back up time, we might write the script a little bit different from the Bible standpoint. But it's irrelevant now. They're married. They're in a covenant relationship, and they are married. I think biblically we can make that argument. Some people would say biblically you can't make that argument. This 2 days ago, I got a phone call from somebody saying, you know, this person needs help because their ministry team at their church is telling them they've got a divorce because they shouldn't have gotten married, and now they got a divorce. So the prescription from the church is divorce. That's a theologically driven practice. I don't agree with it at all. I think it's a really tough argument. If you want to debate this offline, we can. But you see what I'm saying? There's a few couple of key questions you got to answer. Okay, so let's move on. A few ministers and authors and Christian experts have experienced it. Not many people are walking through ministry who have actually been there, done that, living the step family journey. And if you are, I think you have a louder voice because you really have a lot of credibility with the other step couples in your church. But there's not a lot of us. And so because we're not sensitive to it, we're not teaching about it. That's what it comes down to, right? I mean, I hate to tell you, but ministers are just regular people. And what's going on in their world is what's going on in your world. Because that's what they're going to teach about. And if they haven't lived it, they also often just don't have an awareness about it. And so we have to raise their awareness. One other barrier is we don't perceive the need. It's true, congregations do tend to have a lower percentage of step families than the community around them. But I'm seeing lots of churches where that's just not true. I mean, anymore, there's people flocking, especially to the bigger, larger mega churches. People are flocking to those churches because they're safe. Going back to Jamie's presentation just last hour, if you were in here, the whole idea of vulnerability is really difficult for step families in churches. They don't want to be vulnerable with their story because they don't want you to judge them. Which brings me to my last barrier, and that's they get spiritually marginalized. They get pushed to the edge by people and judgment and, well, oh, you're one of those. Oh my goodness, you went through it. You know, and the kind of things that we say from the pulpit that really kind of marginalize it, that say you're less than. We've got to be careful about that. What we say publicly really, really matters. You have an opportunity at your church coming up very soon. Mother's Day is just around the corner. And if you're like a lot of churches, you're going to do something on Mother's Day to acknowledge the women, the moms in the audience, right? And it usually goes something like this. Hey, if you're a mom here today, it's Mother's Day. We want to say thank you to you. And the children are running down the aisle now with a flower to give you, whatever it is that you do. And I say, just do something simple like, hey, if you're a mom today, if you're a stepmom today, if you're a foster mom today, if you're an adoptive mom today, if you're a grandma and you're here, if you're a woman and you're mentoring the neighbor's kid or somebody who's not your child, we want to say thank you for pouring into the life of kids. Just say the word stepmom. Two reasons. One, Mother's Day is the worst day of the year for most stepmoms. They feel anxious about the day. They're not sure if they should stand because the kids know that I'm not their mother, but my husband's telling me I should stand, and I don't know what to do. Most of the stepmoms I know boycott Mother's Day. They don't go. I'm serious. That's reason one. So reason two is when you say the word, number one, you say, we know you're here. We love you. It's okay. You're giving validation to their experience in the church community, and you're also pointing out that it's all right, and that there's other women, foster moms, adopted moms, and lots of types of mothering that takes place in our culture today. And you're just acknowledging that. And that's what I call one of those bridges of grace. They've already got the shame factor going on behind the scenes that says, well, we screwed up, and that's why we're in this family situation. They're already kind of feeling less than. And when you build that bridge of grace, you're helping to give an antidote to that. You're helping to give an antidote to that. Yeah, one quick question.
When you, I guess, bells and whistles kind of come up for me, when I hear that word like stepmom or stepdad, or it's almost like it feels second class kind of.
Yeah.
And that's why I have a really bad.
Kind of have a little visceral reaction to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's kind of like, well, I don't want to be felt like I'm different.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And my response is, that totally makes sense. Let's ask the kids. Because it's the adults who don't like the step terms. It's children who know that's exactly right. You will never hear a child say, hi, I'd like to introduce you to my, here's my blended mom. They'll say stepmom. It's exceedingly clear. And by the way, I'm going to come back to what you just said, because you just made a point for me that's really important about swimming in the stepfamily ocean. So let me just say a little bit more. We actually did a little research of Christian stepfamilies, and we asked them, why do you think Christian stepfamilies don't come to a Bible class, or don't come to a conference, or don't buy a book in a bookstore? What do you think's going on? The vast majority of them said they're ashamed of being divorced, they're avoiding the social stigmas. They would prefer that people at church don't know they're divorced. You have far more divorced people in your church than you realize. You have far more divorced and remarried couples in your marriage class than you realize. They're hiding because they just don't like to tell the story. And they are afraid of how they're going to be treated. The vulnerability comes with risk. So we have to do things to communicate. It's all right. It's okay. It's all good. God loves you. So do we. And using the word stepmom on Mother's Day is just one little way of doing that. But it really goes a long way over time when you add those kinds of things up. Okay, so not all marriages are created the same. How are they different? If we took the puzzle pieces of marriage life, family life, and we put them together, you create a home. Now, this is the first family home. It has a size and a shape and a color and a texture. And if you walked in, it has a smell. Now, if we take some of those pieces out, and now we combine them with pieces from another home, we get a home. This one has a size and a shape and a color and a texture. It has a different smell if you walked in. Very different looking home, right? So intervention one with step families is when the couple is walking down the aisle, if you have a pre-step family opportunity to influence them, or post once the wedding. When they walk down the aisle, what they think they're creating is this. But life immediately teaches them it's that. Right? And how does that come? Well, the first time, hey, pick up your socks, and I'm sorry, you're not my dad, I don't have to do what you say. That's pretty much this, right? And then that stepdad in that situation going, yeah, but I'm paying the bills, and yeah, I'm the one here who's here, and I'm invested in you and your life, and I'm the man of the house, and God says don't, whatever, and you ought to, and the kid's going, yeah, but I got a dad, and you're not it. You with me? There's 1,000 ways that little reality hits them in the face. So what I'm saying is, again, I want you to hear this. First families are families. Second families are families. But they have a different size, different shape, different color. And it's our job to help them understand what it is to build this. To recognize that there are pieces that go to another home every other weekend and 6 weeks in the summer. And it's our job to help them understand that so that they can live it well. Got it? All right. So here's Susie, married to John. They had 3 kids, then they got a divorce. Here's Bob, married to Betty. They had 2 kids, then they got a divorce. And Betty's married to Frank now, and Bob's married to Susie now. Bob and Susie are going to your church. They walk into your Sunday school every week, and you're going to teach the marriage class or the parenting class or the whatever class, the Gospel of John class. Mm-hmm. And that's where they are. They're part of your church, and they've got 5 kids. And Susie knew she was getting a mother-in-law and a father-in-law when she married Betty, but she didn't know she was getting an ex-wife-in-law. And so when Susie goes to ladies' Bible class, And it's prayer request time. She says, you know, I'm really struggling with my husband's ex-wife. She is just a loser, let me tell you. She just really messes up our life and our schedule. And she's taking us back to court. And there's so much stress in my marriage because of all the stuff going on with Betty. And let me tell you what happens for Susie when she says that at Ladies Bible Class. All the women sitting in there in first marriages going, oh my word, what is that? That's so weird. I can't believe she talks that way about that woman. And there's judgment. And there's shame. And there's just, I don't get it. Disconnect. And Susie looks around and she sees that look on everybody's face and she learns, oh, see, shouldn't have said anything. And she hides. She marginalizes. And now church is not a safe place to be vulnerable. And that happens fast. And we've got to do little things constantly to be combating that, building bridges of grace to help people figure out how to do life. Bob has an ex-husband-in-law. Susie has primary custody of her three kids, but every other weekend they're spending time with their dad. John, Betty has primary custody of her two, and on occasion Bob and Susie have all five. This is one step-family genogram that may just walk into your church. Here's another one. Cindy and Rick, married 18 years, had two kids. Rick's tragically killed in a car accident. Cindy has since remarried Larry, and that's their new stepfamily. Notice how different that one looks than the last one, but it's also a stepfamily. Here's another one. Alicia was married to Scott, divorced, no kids. Jason had Tamara out of wedlock with Katrina, and now he's dating Alicia. They're trying to figure out life a little bit. It's a completely different looking genogram. One of the challenges of doing stepfamily education is that you don't know who's in the room. You don't know what their configuration is. We did the math. There are 67 different types of stepfamily configurations. I showed you three. So as a teacher, I have a challenging job to come up with material. So I've written a bunch of books. Which one of these fits with that family? Which one fits with the second one? Which one? You know, you understand the question? What topics do we need to address? Do we always have to talk about ex-spouse relationships? I think more often than not, there's an ex involved in somebody. If you have a group of 10 people in your classroom, that's probably going to be an issue for somebody in the room, but it might not be an issue. It might be that you have five couples in that room who are all widowed, and there's not another home. And you still have a loss narrative. But it's a lost narrative of death, not a lost narrative of divorce. And so that creates a different storyline. You begin to see how the challenges that can come into play. But here's the good news, all right, before you panic. You don't have to come up with a different strategy for all 67 types. There are some very core dynamics that are true for most of those 67 types. And that's what I tend to write about, is those things that are common. You'll also find little sidebars, like some of you may be familiar with this book. This is the first book I wrote in 2002. It came out. And in 2 weeks, it comes out like this. It revised and expanded. And here's one of the things we expanded in it. Little sidebars. So you get these little side tips that are written for the different types, right? So we're talking about parenting in this section, and all of a sudden, this is a parenting tip for the step-parent who has part-time kids that show up one weekend a month. That's a very different step-parent situation than being a full-time step-parent, right? And so that's the kind of thing that we're trying to add and is built into these different resources. The bottom line is you can't talk about everything in a resource, but you can talk about the core things. And so that's what I've really tried to do. So there's different combinations, there's different experiences, and yet we're going to try to come through and give them what we can. Let me jump into this one. Driving a biological family looks like this. You got side impact, you got airbags everywhere. It's a Volvo, for crying out loud. You know, crash rating, safety, awesome. Okay? Driving a single-parent family looks a little like this. Susceptible to side impact. You've lost a wheel. It doesn't corner nearly as well as the other one does. Driving a step family looks like this. Actually, when you add all the people, it looks like this. Now, notice, it takes a whole lot of balance and coordination to make that thing work. It's pretty awesome when you get there. But learning how to balance and coordinate, that's a journey. And what do you do if you have one child who didn't want to hang on and play nice? They just want to lean over and tip everybody, and they can. And the video, that's called, I like to call that the carrot in the crock pot. It just won't soften. It just won't cook. They're just not interested in joining everybody to make stew. It can happen. And that is a challenge that then the couple has to try to manage and deal with. Do you begin to feel the weight of why we got to do this? It's a redemptive ministry. It's changing not only this generation and the future one, and it brings its own challenges and its own resourcing and has its own messaging. It's not just what we've always done. It's something different than that. Okay, so three key objectives I want to give you. Acknowledge that they're there. Do things from the pulpit. Do things on Sunday morning. Have a couple stand up once a year, twice a year, and say, hey, we're the Joneses and we're a step family. And let me tell you, we've had some challenges, and it hasn't always been easy, but you know, we go to the step family group, and man, it's really helpful for us, and it's really made a difference in our life. Thank you. Amen. Get them off the stage. And you have said to the church, it's okay to be a step family here. God loves you. So do we. We know you're here. We got answers. Come join us. You got to do things like that. Get, you know, preacher to use illustrations from the Old Testament. Talk about the step families in the Old Testament. Now, we didn't call them step families, but that's what they were. Right? It was not a marriage and a divorce and a remarriage. It's marriage, 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 marriage. Jacob had four wives, and it was a total mess to the point that the stepbrothers wanted to kill their Joseph, the favored kid from the favored... It's a big step family story. Okay? All of a sudden, you just connect around those things, use those illustrations. What you're saying is, we know you're there, we love you, it's okay. Build bridges of grace. Educate. You got to give them answers to the questions that they are asking. Not answers to first families, answers to the step family ocean story. Loss. Parenting and step parenting, how do you be a team? The process of becoming a family. How do you cook a step family? That's the crock pot metaphor that I use. It's not fast. It's not quick. It's not a blender. It's not a microwave. It's a slow crock pot. The average step family needs between 5 and 7 years to kind of figure out their family identity, right? And so when you let them know that, oh, we're normal. Oh, that makes sense. Now what do we do? And you're providing guidance and answers that really connect and build in to their life. I'll give you some more examples of how you educate and a couple things you can say, but I got to keep moving on with time. This continuum of care is something that I think is a good metaphor, a good way of thinking about what you might do. This comes from the work of Jeff and Judy Parziel. Let me just walk through this with you. So over here you got divorce recovery. That's not a nice place. You can start doing pre-step family counseling in your divorce care stuff. All you got to do is go in on the last session and go, hey, we know you guys aren't dating and you're not planning to get married anytime soon. And some of them are already by that point. Kind of wish people wouldn't do that, but they are. And you say, read this article. This is about step family living. And if you ever start dating again, we just want you to know we can kind of help you with that. And they'll ignore you and they'll think you're crazy. And 2 years later, they've fallen in love. And they're going to come back and they're going to ask you for help and guidance. And so you can plant seeds even in that season. Healthy singles, so they're a single parent. So support single parents. I am a strong, strong believer that single parents who do a really good job through that season of single parenting, doing a good job of what? A good job of maintaining behavioral standards, consequences, follow through in parenting. Those kids adapt easier to the step family experience because they're used to this. And mom, let's just say it's a single mom. Mom is clearly in charge then and now. Nothing's changed. That really helps speed up the step family journey, the cooking process. But if in single parent years, mom does this, gets permissive, doesn't follow through, kids get used to running all over her, and then she marries a number one super stepdad, he's going to come in, right all the wrongs, fix everything, raise the standard of conduct in the home, guess what? That is a setup for conflict, big time. So single parent ministry is a huge step should they someday get married. Remarriage prep, I would call that pre-step family prep. Give me just a minute, all right? Get through some things and we'll do some questions. I would call that pre-step family prep. We got to do premarital counseling differently. You want to give them everything you give the first married couples. how to communicate, how to resolve conflict, how to manage their money, how to have sex. You want to give them all that stuff. And then you want to give them all the stuff about swimming in this ocean. Ex-spouses, children, parenting, step-parenting. One of the things I say to people is, if you use our video series, The Smart Step Family, and you teach that at your church, you have a group. So these are step couples that are married going through this group. And then you have a pre-step family couple come in, plug them into the group. Make them go and go through the class. They're not there yet, but it raises their awareness. It shows them some things, and they're sitting in the room with all these other couples going, yeah, I sure thought it was going to be easy, but it's been tough. And it opens their eyes. And that's part of our job in premarital work. What's the old proverb? Before marriage, keep both eyes open. After marriage, keep one eye shut. It's not bad, you know. And so we got to open their eyes for them because they don't know what they need. Then step family education is kind of the natural flow of that. So we're going to teach them, train them, equip them while they're there. Yes, the marriage enrichment program you already have in place will help and benefit. It will supplement what you're doing in terms of the step family stuff. So you get a sense that there's different ways you can intervene. You can't do all of that, but I bet you could start here and it might be pretty easy to do that. And then as time goes on, maybe you can start a step family class or a small group that meets in somebody's home once a week. And you do that once a year. I was at a church, what's today, Wednesday? Monday, flew in, went to a church up in Santa Clarita, and twice a year they lead an 8-week group that goes through this material, and that's what they're able to do at this point. Wonderful. That's where they could start. All they needed was one couple willing to lead it. Go. They're going to expand on that, and they're going to start adding some of this premarital stuff. And so that you start where you can start. Okay, so what we're saying is marriage ministry really has just broadened a little bit. It used to be all about premarital. We kind of do the marriage stuff pretty well. But now we got to add this whole blended family strategy to it. And all of that together makes for a really good marriage ministry. If 30 to 40% of everybody getting married is forming a blended family, if 40% of families already in existence are a blended family, how can we not do it? How can we not do it? We just have to try to get there as best we can. So we talked about educating for a minute. Here's one last illustration of the kind of things that's different in working with parents within step families. You guys know this chart looks at parenting styles, and this authoritative parenting style is where you have a great deal of boundaries and follow-through and consequences and expectations from kids. That's what in charge is about. And you also have a high degree of warmth. That's loving your kids, being their biggest fan, letting them know you're crazy about them and that you love them, and nothing's ever going to change that. When you put those two things together, you get what we call authoritative parenting. That's where we want the biological parent to be on day one in the step family. Where we want the step parent to be feels permissive. It's really about them developing a warmth, a relationship with the kids. If you don't connect and emotionally and form an attachment, you know, the attachment styles, back to the last session Jamie was talking about. If you don't form a connection and attachment, how can you lead a child? You got to earn some respect there. So we want step parents to kind of come in like a babysitter does. You can get stuff done. Babysitters get stuff done, but they're not really in charge. They're just the stand-in. Does that make sense? On day one, you're just kind of the stand-in. That's what step-parents are. But you're busy trying to build a relationship with the kids. But we're not going to stay there. Over time, you become more and more family. You were a babysitter in the beginning. Now you're like my uncle or my aunt. And now you're somebody that really has influence in my life because you've earned it. But here's the catch. Here's the problem. A lot of times what happens is that biological parents, instead of being there, they float down to being permissive, which means step-parents go, wow, somebody's got to make the rules happen around here, and you get this polarization between those two people. And now you got parental issues and marital issues. Does that make sense? Bio-parents kind of go, oh, but you don't understand. My kid's been through a lot. They don't have to pick up their socks. And I never made them all those single-parent years. And the step-parent's going, are you kidding me? This is my house. I'm not dealing with that. I'm not putting up with that. We got to right the wrongs around here. And so the more this person gets authoritarian, the more that person gets permissive. The more permissive they get, the more authoritarian they get, and then we get polarized. And we get stuck. And the kids win. Because they get to pull on mama's heart, and stepdad's down here going, man, I lose left and right. And I resent it like crazy. And you can begin to see that's not a good place for that family to go. So that's just one quick illustration of how parenting has to be different. Let me just jump to the resource page. I am going to be around if you want to learn more. Here you go. You can check us out at all of these websites, familylife.com/blended. We are on Facebook, and we got YouTube videos that are free. We got counseling videos on counseling step families, pre-step family counseling. If you use Prepare Enrich, I've done some training with them. There's a lot of options for you. And these are all the resources that we've created that are up here in front of us. We're also doing a summit on step family ministry in Washington, D.C. this October. Would love to have you or some representative from your church being a part of that. Sharon, I know you need to say something.
Right. I just wanted to clarify the afternoon sessions, and I'm glad, Ron, that you mentioned those. The session at 11 and 2:30 are really questions related to the church and how to grow your ministry in the church. And then the session you can sign up to spend more time with Ron at 1 is more about, here are the issues that are going on in my own blended family. I want to talk about those issues here today. So I just wanted to clarify that. And Ron, we thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, glad to be here. Thank you.